family, relationships, and personal growth. Professional counselor Julius Dudix is here to help. Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
As we wrap up May and Mental Health Awareness Month, we're going to talk about loneliness, which may not seem like that kind of relates, but a new report from the U.S. Surgeon General says that social isolation's effects on mortality are equal to smoking up to 15 cigarettes every single day. Social isolation, or being lonely, can contribute to a person having a higher risk of heart disease, stroke, anxiety, depression, dementia, and it can make people more susceptible to infectious diseases. This is a real issue. And the thing is you might be saying, okay, but I still don't see the connection to mental health. When you are lonely, when you are alone, you a lot of times struggle because you're sort of embedded in your thoughts, or you go down rabbit holes, or you can feel the impacts of being by yourself, and that can trigger a lot of mental health issues. So we have Julius Dudix here to talk a little bit more about this, to understand it, and ways that we can fix the problem. Julius, welcome back. So glad that you wanted to talk about this. It's a really important topic. How are you?
Good, Melissa. Thanks for having me back. Yeah, it is an important topic because so many people do wrestle with loneliness. Mm-hmm. And Melissa, let's kick it off by saying that it can be normal. You know, we all feel lonely at times. I'm not talking about the surface loneliness. I'm talking about when it becomes almost an obsessive kind of thing with you. And when you're chronically feeling, you know, I'm not associating with anybody. I'm by myself. And those are the kinds of things, you know, the deeper when it affects your sleep, appetite, exercise, the quality of your relationships. You've really got to ask, you know, what's going on here? And why can't, is it I can't or I won't? You know, I just will not reach out. Is it I can't reach out? There's something going on deeper. It could be a symptom of depression. But a lot of people wrestle with loneliness. And, you know, you got to ask yourself why. And a lot of times it's rooted in rejection. You know, you've been rejected. If I call a friend, they're not going to want to hang out. If I call somebody for a date, they're not going to want to hang out kind of thing.
I'm curious, Julius, because sometimes you hear of people who say they're so lonely, but they have a lot of friends and they go to a lot of social gatherings and they have a big family. Yeah. And you think, okay, well, on the surface, the math isn't there. I don't see it. How can you be lonely? How is it that people feel so lonely and yet they are surrounded by so many people?
Yeah, because basically the quality of the authenticity is lacking.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if you feel like your peers truly don't know you, they don't know the real me. You could be with your spouse, but not with your spouse. You could be with a friend, but not with your friend. Mm-hmm. And I often encourage couples, you know, you need to spend time with each other about each other and really kind of go deeper in terms of the authenticity, the genuine. What do you really feel? What do you really think? You know, those deeper conversations need to be had by spouses and by friends. And that feeds the ability to not feel lonely. It's when the authenticity is lacking. And when we really don't want to be authentic with ourselves, because the bottom line is, hey, if I share this, am I going to be rejected? Am I going to feel, awkward, or am I going to feel isolated, or... You know, people don't want to be the true version of yourself. People don't want to, just be themselves.
But that sounds more like, Julius, you don't accept yourself if you're worried about other people.
Yeah, yeah. And the bottom line is, then the question becomes, why don't you accept yourself? Mm-hmm. And many times, we sometimes people, I'll sit with somebody and I'll say, hey, do you really deserve this? Do you really deserve to be happy? You really deserve to have friends. And quite often, we've beaten ourselves up so much.
And we say
we're
no.
Telling ourselves, yeah. And it's all rolls up. You know, rejection is huge in life when we're rejected. Remember, it takes 7 positives to undo 1 negative. Melissa, in college, there's a joke, and I'll never forget it. I called 8 women in a row for a date back in the 70s. And, you know, I was rejected 8 times.
Wow. Okay. Julius, what in the world? Did you have a funky hairdo? What was going on there, buddy?
I had the long hair. Melissa.
I knew it.
My point, I feel like a certain amount of self-disclosure is healthy in counseling.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, 8 times I was rejected. And it hurt. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've been rejected before.
Oh, God,
but
yes.
We can't let the rejection fuel our inability to really deal with, hey, am I lonely? Because loneliness, you know, can be, like you said, Surgeon General, 15 cigarettes a day. It just causes stress.
Mm-hmm.
And stress, you know, causes, that's our immune system. It counts against the white blood cells, get lower, 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 and we get sick and so forth because our stress is killing off our white blood count and so forth, and our immune system is down. It's just a myriad of issues that can affect us.
And unfortunately, talking to our morning show counselor, Julius Dudix, about loneliness and the impacts it can have on people, unfortunately, the last few years, especially the beginning of COVID, we had no choice but to stay away from people we love or we want to spend time
right.
with.
Good point.
And I'm sure we are seeing higher numbers of it. My question, Julius, is, you know, can you rekindle friendships, even if it's not the exact same as it was before COVID? Some people are realizing that, hey, you know, COVID really put a huge strain on longtime friendships or new friendships we were starting, and it's sort of hard to go back to them. How do you do that? How can you go back to them?
That's a great question. Yeah, the first step is to get real. Get real with yourself. You know, this is what I'm going through. I feel like I'm lonely. I feel like I'm isolated. I come home from work. Maybe nobody's in the house. Get real with yourself. Most people try to deny that they're lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kind of go off. And what happens is then your brain will habituate into this pattern of behavior where I only call one person a week, or I don't call anybody a week, or, mm-hmm. well, I don't care. I'm going to, you know, cross my hands and just sit down and say, if they wanted me, they'd call me. And that's not correct thinking. But you've got to, you know, you can't refuse to come to terms with your loneliness.
Certainly.
You can't put up your chance
to
do something about it.
Can't deny that. We're talking about loneliness, self-isolation, and how it can bring very negative impacts to your health. Things like having a higher risk of heart disease, stroke, anxiety, depression, even dementia, and people becoming more susceptible to infectious diseases. So what can we do to combat the problem? Julius Dudix is here, our morning show counselor. Julius, let's talk about the impacts of social media on loneliness, and I would think making it a bigger problem than it already is. What have you found when it comes to cell phone usage and just being on social media and contributing to the problem?
Yeah, cell phone. Yeah, absolutely. Melissa, what people do is they hop into this, I call it escape fantasy, where they just go on their cell phone, they read. And what they're doing is they're really looking for a relationship, or they'll hop into Fortnite, or they'll hop into some type of video game just to ease their pain of what they're feeling. And that's never a healthy thing when you do that habitually. Remember, we always build on truth. And the truth is, social media is fine to the extent that it doesn't control you or cause you to run away from that feeling of loneliness that really you should be confronting. And so, yeah, it does play a big role on it because you could teach your brain to hop onto Facebook or Snapchat or whatever. And really what you're looking for is you're looking for deeper relationship because, Melissa, the truth is we were created for relationship with others, with ourselves, with a God who loves us. And once we really begin to understand our purpose is to have relationship with others, relationship with other people, relationship with ourselves in a healthy way and with a God who loves us. And so that's kind of, you start from that square number one.
Mm.
So what do we do with it?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
How do you break the cycle? And Melissa, I always encourage clients who come talking about loneliness and such to pick up the phone and call somebody. And just in terms of go deeper, though, rather than just say, hey, how you doing? What's going on? Fine. Actively listen. And that's a whole nother realm of discussion. How do you actively listen to somebody? And you know, how do you let the other person talk? But listen to their story. People are thirsty for that kind of a interaction. Mm-hmm. People want to be listened to. And when you assume the posture of, I'm just going to focus on this friend and I'm going to be an active listener, or if I meet them for coffee or whatever, I'm going to make sure my body language, my eye contact, my posture and so forth, my facial expressions, they show a genuine interest in other people. You will be fed yourself, and then you can begin to kind of move forward in that way. But, you know, you've got to really identify, why am I lonely? And what can I do about it? And what are some positive steps I can take? Some people just need to get a pet. Sometimes a pet can help. Or maybe join a club or take a class. Mm-hmm. Or just sit back, Melissa, and think, what can I do? I can volunteer. I always encourage, you know, people to write down positive memories. Just take 10 minutes and jot down positive memories from the past.
I love that.
And when you remember all the, you know, the good Memorial Day picnics we've had, or we remember all the good Yankee games we saw, you know, that kind of thing. It kind of fuels your ability to feel positive about yourself, and then you'll want to create more of those memories.
Yeah.
But really, it's up to you to face it and kind of ask the question, you know, what's going on here? And how can I really break this cycle? Because it really is a, I feel so bad for people. Sometimes people just get stuck, and before you know it, a month goes by, 6 months goes by.
Exactly.
And you don't think about it. And there are people qualified to help.
Yeah. And Julius, if you were that first step for anybody listening, what is your website for people to learn more information and connect to you?
Yeah, it's njcc.online, or you can call the office at 203-243-7714.
And, of course, the big thing that Julius always says is don't stay stuck. It's really important.
So one more thing. I was scammed about a week ago.
Yes, I shared it on the air. Yes.
Thank you so much.
Oh, it's fine.
Man, that was awful. I've tried to contact as many as I could to let them know that, yeah, these people, these scammers will stoop to do anything to get money and all that. So thank you for sharing that.
Oh, it's no problem, Julius. Luckily, after having you on the air for a couple of years, people knew it wasn't you. So they know you and your heart and that you would never do that. But yes, it's no problem at all. But thank you for reiterating that, because if anybody did get those emails and you're connected to Julius, that is not him. It was not him.
I don't have laryngitis.
Well, that's what I thought was funny is it came out and I'm like, he was just on the show yesterday. But OK, maybe I'm crazy, because we all know I am a little bit crazy. So,
right.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Thank you for everything, Julius. We don't deserve you. Thank you.
Thank you for all you do, Melissa.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Julius Dudix here, the real Julius without laryngitis on WICC. I am very honored to have back in studio with us Kevin McGrath, who, of course, is the very proud father of Jimmy McGrath. Also joining us in studio is Sean Rabinowitz. And Sean, I learned, is the chairperson of the golf tournament committee, as well as a board member for the Jimmy McGrath Foundation. So I welcome you both in studio. Thank you for being here. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having us.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you guys. Of course. Before we get to the golf tournament, I wanted to obviously check in with you, Kevin, and really kind of reiterate for people what the foundation is and really the purpose around it. So could you talk a little bit about it?
Sure. So like I've always said, is Jimmy was really the one that established the foundation while he was alive. He was just a good friend to many, helped a lot of kids struggling through issues. Never realized that till, you know, after he passed, and, you know, the young men and girls would come up to us and just, you know, say how wonderful he was as a friend. As we, the week after he passed, we had the Shelton Prep lacrosse game, and I looked out into the sea of baby blue and just realized people in our community have struggled. This was, you know, the third death in Shelton within less than a year. And people needed us as much as we needed them.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the impetus of, you know, creating the foundation. And then the support has just been overwhelming, you know, just for us as a family, for the foundation. And I think, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to put, you know, the funds to work supporting, you know, all youth athletic programs. We've supported Bridgeport Youth Lacrosse, Wakeman's Cowboys. The Adams House, which is a house, an establishment in Shelton that helps, you know, young kids, you know, go through grief.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just a lot of things that we're going to do. And then I really want to, you know, the what we really want to do is work with the area schools and after school programs to help deal with mental health.
Mm.
Yeah, on the way here, I listened to you and Julius before, and a lot of things resonated and hit home just to my own personal situation.
Mm-hmm.
So mental health is something, you know, May is the month to focus on it, and you know, we'd love to help any way we can.
Yeah, and just like normalizing that conversation, I think that was something that clearly you learned about your son. He was just really good at normalizing that and not making people feel like they were alienated if they were struggling with something. It seemed like Jimmy was really, really good at that.
He really was. And it's, you know, they graduated last weekend, and all the young men that came out to me and shared their story, how, you know, they were younger and Jimmy opened them up, accepted him to the group, was, you know, it just, you know, it brings a tear to my eye, but it just makes me so much more proud to be his father.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's incredible. And so the Jimmy McGrath Foundation was created. Is this going to be your second year for the golf tournament?
This is our first.
This is your first.
This is
okay,
our first, right?
Very exciting. Well, I felt like you guys like had a big like an open, like a mic night, or you had like a big band night.
We had the
night.
Concert.
So
yes.
I couldn't remember if you guys had the golf tournament
right.
before. So this is your first golf tournament. This
is our first golf tournament.
Very,
so we're
very
really
exciting.
Excited. Sean and the team have done a wonderful job. It's kind of one of those I was able to just kind of push the reins over, and you know, they've taken it over, and it's just incredible. We sold out extremely quickly. The corporate sponsors have been fantastic. Just the response has been overwhelming to us.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Sean, you're in the hot seat now because we get to talk about the details of the golf tournament. So I know you guys are sold out for golfers, but there's still plenty of room for people to get involved with this tournament coming up next month.
Absolutely, Melissa. As a credit to Jimmy, we sold out of foursomes in 8 days.
Wow.
8 days. We
that's
went
amazing.
Live. 8 days later, I had to tell the committee, hey, we shut down. And that's just an example of how special Jimmy was and how his legacy will continue on. But there is still room for sponsorships. And more importantly, we have a huge dinner that night. So not only are we golfing that day, but we have a dinner. We have a happy hour starting at 4 o'clock with an acoustic band. And then we have a live electric band playing from 6 to 9 o'clock that night. We have a full raffle, open bar, silent auction, buffet dinner. We're trying to hit everyone, right? Is we want people to come out and golf. We have sponsors to cover the golf. We have sponsors covering also happy hour and dinner, but we want to make sure everyone's represented, right? If you don't play golf, come have dinner, have drinks. We're going to be celebrating Jimmy all day.
Yeah, I love that. And of course, if you resonate with Jimmy's story, and whether you are a Fairfield resident or whether you have children of your own, or just hearing this and just knowing the story, I think Jimmy McGrath's story is just so it's hard. Like you were saying, we were talking about this, Kevin, the fact that, you know, Prep just graduated and we just came up on his 1 year anniversary, and you're sort of seeing the news of what's going on and how it's playing out. I think it's a story that's really resonated with so many people. So I think there are so many opportunities for people to support it and to give to the foundation and be involved with this upcoming event. And it looks like it's coming up in a matter of weeks. It's on June 26th. What are some of the details, Sean? Can you give us more where it's happening, all that good
stuff?
Sure.
The golf tournament is going to be June 26th at Smith Richardson Golf Course in Fairfield. We're registering at 8:30. We're teeing off promptly at 11. We want everyone off the course at 4 and ready to party and have a great evening that night.
That's amazing. And if you could reiterate for us again, Kevin, sort of really the goal here. I know that obviously being able to have the conversations like we have on the air is super important and having them out in the community. But Jimmy had done some work, like volunteer work and stuff with, like you were saying, different sports groups. So would some of the money be going, you think, to some of those groups and helping those young athletes like Jimmy had tried to do, obviously, in the time that
he's
here?
Yes, it's definitely. So we really want it because we believe, you know, youth athletic programs are they really help from the mental health
Absolutely.
Perspective, right? You're out there, you're playing, there's teammates, you're learning respect, you're learning how to, you know, win with grace, lose with dignity. So there's a lot of things going there. And each program is a little different. So, right? So we're going to give back, you know, we've given back to Shelton Youth Lacrosse, which is a specific to youth lacrosse. But when you look at the programs in Bridgeport Youth Lacrosse and Wakeman Cowboys, it's more than just sports. Mm-hmm. They have STEM projects. They have a lot of after school activities. You know, each program has their different challenges, you know, coming from how do we get the children from school to practice or to that program? is coaching. They're in need of coaches in Bridgeport Youth Lacrosse. Wakeman has a little bit a different situation because they have a football program, and there's a lot of football coaches in Bridgeport, but not a lot of youth lacrosse.
Mm.
So some of the funding is going to go to help some of the fathers and adults learn how to coach youth lacrosse.
That's amazing.
Adam's House really speaks for itself. You know, they're really helpful.
Adam's House. Yeah.
To everything. You know, tunnels to towers. That's something, you know, law enforcement and the military is something that was really important to us and our family.
Mm.
So just really to try to give back. And the other part is really to dive into mental health, because mental health means different things. You know, your discussion with Julius, it was from loneliness. You know, you look at, you know, Kevin's afterglow, it's depression.
Mm-hmm.
So working, what we're trying to do is also work with the different foundations to, instead of all of us having our own pockets of funds, you know, how do we do something together to make more of an impact into the community?
I love that. And actually, we're having Kevin's Afterglow on tomorrow, same time tomorrow. So I'm very excited because I think both you guys, which I always found very ironic that you guys have opposite names. It's very, I don't know, it's ironic.
There's been a lot of coincidences that have come up since Jimmy's death that, you know, they're not coincidences.
Right, exactly, exactly.
And he'll probably talk about his outing.
I was going to say.
Are you a part of that?
I'm not, but I do know that he's got a golf tournament coming up.
He's got, I believe it's the 12th.
The 12th.
Okay, so maybe I was confusing the two dates. I was like, I feel like there's one in the teens there. Okay, wow.
So, and that's at Smith Richardson as well.
It's amazing. It's really beautiful. And really quick, actually, Sean, I don't think I asked this. What is the website if people want to get all the information?
Sure. It's www.jimmymcgrathfoundation.org. You can go right on the website to purchase a sponsorship, purchase tickets for dinner. All the details for the event of June 26 are right on there. And there's a little bit about the foundation as well.
That's excellent. So again, Jimmy McGrath Foundation, all spelled out, .org. And Sean and Kevin, I thank you both so much for coming in studio and for being here. And I hope that, I'm sure it's going to be a great success, but I hope that it is everything you guys dreamed of, for sure.
We hope you come and see us.
I'm not a golfer, so this actually works out great. So all the golfers took care of that part, and I can take care of the other part. So I'm very excited. Yes, I would love to come to the dinner. That'd be really fun. That'd be great. So I thank you guys so much. And one more time, JimmyMcGrathFoundation.org. Thank you both.
Thank you, Melissa. Great support. To see you.
Absolutely. Hope to see you guys really soon. I have the distinct honor now, 2 years in a row, to sit in the audience and watch senior projects for Bridge Academy in Bridgeport. It's a charter school. And thanks to my friend Steve Gaines, who has taught there for nearly 10 years, and he does a local column for the Fairfield Citizen. And I was excited to be there earlier this month. I listened to a couple of senior projects. What's neat about the senior project presentation is that these students work really hard to put together about a 15-minute presentation about a topic that they've done a lot of research on and that they're passionate about talking about. And they present it most times in front of complete strangers, people like me, who they've never met before, but are there to not only listen, but to grade them and to give them feedback. It's super intimidating, super intimidating. Even for myself, who works as a talker, I talk for a living. I am terrified of public speaking, let alone I couldn't imagine being a high school senior presenting to a group of strangers and being confident about it. But when I was there at Bridge Academy, everyone was raving about this young lady's presentation. Her name is Aaliyah Walker, and she talked about human trafficking, which is not an easy topic to talk about, even for adults, let alone for a high school senior. So I wanted to hear from her, get her perspective, and have her share some of the things she learned in her research process. So Aaliyah, welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you here. How are you?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
I'm
so
good.
Glad.
How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much. I wanted to ask you, first of all, why human sex trafficking and the treatment of women? You know, why dive into this topic?
Well, so basically, I realized that a lot of people were unaware of the things that happen in our own state. You know, you talk to other teenagers and they're like, oh, well, you know, you think of sex trafficking, like, all right, it's just sex trafficking. Then you kind of just go about your day, you know. And I found while doing a lot of research that a lot of people that end up being sex trafficked are people that are like victims of childhood sexual abuse and things like that. And I realized that I had a lot of friends also like myself who have been in that position, and we just ended up being like one of the lucky ones, you know? Mm-hmm. And I thought it's a really important topic to really bring awareness to, because it's not thought of very much.
Kudos to you, because you're absolutely right. And I'm sure in your research, Aaliyah, you found out that human sex trafficking is actually very alive and well in Connecticut. We have a big problem, especially where, like you said, where we live in Fairfield County. It's a huge, huge problem. And so share with us, if you don't mind, when you started to do your research and you realized that, wow, Connecticut actually has a serious issue with this. How did you feel?
Honestly, it scared me a little bit, especially because I have like a little niece, you know, and she goes to school and things like that. You know, you can really become a victim at any time. Anyone that you know can become a victim at any time. You know, I found that a lot of the victims that end up being sex trafficked, like in the United States in general, 52% of them are Black women. They're survivors, 52%. And, you know, being a Black woman myself, it's very scary to think about, like, you know, I can be specifically targeted for that. I also found that, like, a lot of LGBTQIA youth were sex trafficked because sometimes they're, like, kicked out of their houses and they have no other, like, option. And, you know, I found that within 48 hours of a teen being on the street, they are approached by a pimp, which was absolutely insane to me. It's like, 48 hours? Like, not even a good 3 days yet. And you're approached by a pimp to start sex trafficking or something like that. Being pimped up.
Was that scary for you to stand up in front of people, especially like I was saying in the beginning, people you've never met before, and present something that, quite frankly, Aaliyah, even as an adult, like I have a child, it's a hard topic to talk about, even as adults, let alone somebody who is a young person, and you have all of these details and you're speaking to people you're not familiar with about something like this. Was that intimidating for you?
Oh, well, fortunately, unlike my other classmates, I had the opportunity to present in front of people that I already knew.
Oh, you were one of the lucky ones. Okay.
I was one of the lucky ones.
I still think that's scary, though. I have to be honest. There are times where, like, I look, my colleagues here at the radio station are like family. And when I have to present something like a news story and I have to dive deep into it and I've got to present it to the whole, you know, sales department or whatever, it's scary. And so even if you're familiar, you know, what was that like to even look at your teachers or even your classmates and say things like human sex trafficking? It's here and here are the statistics and here's what I know. Like that is not an easy conversation to have with anybody.
I honestly think the hardest part of, like, everything that I presented was talking about, I don't know if Mr. Gaines told you about how porn contributes to the sex trafficking industry.
He did not.
I think that was, like, that was, like, something where I was like, should I talk about that? Should I not talk about that? Because, like, you know, people are, like, on the fence about that one. But it was something that I found really interesting, and it was absolutely mind-blowing what I found out. But yeah, so it's not as bad, because I've always been pretty good at like presenting in front of people. I don't really have an issue public speaking. So that was like the only thing that was like, ugh.
Yeah, well, because those are like words like, when would I ever say porn in front of my teachers, right?
I mean, exactly.
Even you're on the radio, it's like, oh, do I even bring this up to Melissa? But it's fine. I just said it for you. So you're good. You're all set. I am curious, though, what do you hope people took away from your presentation?
I really hope that people gain like a true awareness and not like something that we just push into the back of our minds about sex trafficking. I hope that they really, like, you know, I wouldn't want to say like are able to like spot out a victim, but like figure out ways to like maybe donate to foundations, you know, try and help other people that may have been sex trafficked, or, you know, bring awareness that children who have been sexually assaulted actually need like to be exposed to like therapy and things like that. Like, it's important to keep your eye like on your children, as unfortunate as it is that you have to keep such a close eye on your children, but like keeping a close eye on your children and things like that.
Do you plan to take this information, Aaliyah, and either put it towards whatever your career may be or bringing attention to it, you know, whether you go to college or whether you do job training or even you as a parent one day? Are these things that you're going to keep pretty close to you and apply to what you've learned to your future?
100%. 100%. personally, for me, I would like to be a sports team physician in the NFL. And I found that a lot of the sex trafficking that goes on actually happens during, like, big sporting events, like the Super Bowl or, like, the World Cup and things like that. So I would definitely love to apply what I've learned, you know, now into my future career and maybe help victims that may have been sex trafficked or even maybe starting a foundation for women and children who have been sex trafficked.
Wow. You have a very bright future. And I want to say you're a very brave person, whether you feel comfortable public speaking or not. I think it is, again, something that most adults have a very hard time talking about. So the fact that you are young and you felt it was more important to at least get the information out there, even if it made people uncomfortable, the fact that you have that kind of tenacity in you just shows that you are worth people's, you know, I don't know, just attention and time. And it's just you have something so special to share with people. And so I want to commend you for doing that, because most people your age would never do that. Most people my age would never do that. So I just want to thank you. And I thank you for sharing it here on our platform as well.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Where are you going next year? What are you doing next year, by the way?
I'm going to Sacred Heart.
Oh, congratulations.
Where I will be. And I'm enrolled in a 3-2 accelerated bachelor's and master's in exercise science and athletic training degree program. That's quite a mouthful, honestly, to say, but I'll be going to Sacred Heart.
God bless you. That is so exciting. Aaliyah Walker, thank you so much for...
Thank you.
Clearly, you passed your senior project. And I'm so glad.
That might have been the most nerve-wracking part of it, is just passing it. Because we get bubbles at the end if we pass.
Right.
You have to walk out through these bubbles.
Right, and if you don't have the bubbles, then you know something went wrong. But you definitely got them. You definitely did, and you got a lot of praise from your teachers. That's how I learned about you. So I thank you again so much for coming on the show, and good luck to you in your future. It's amazing.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely, and happy summer to you. Aaliyah Walker here, and a Bridge Academy student, just an amazing senior project that really rocked her classmates and her teachers, and wanted to share it right here on the air on WICC. When you hear the phrase end of life care, immediately most people suspect that means a person has just days, even hours left before they perish. But that may not be the case. In fact, we are watching that right now. More than 3 months after entering end of life care at home, former President Jimmy Carter is still hanging on in good spirits at 98 years old. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about end of life care and sort of what it means when you get hospice care or you enter hospice, because, again, some people have the wrong perception of what that really means. And so joining us to talk more about this is Dr. Ross Albert. He is the Hospice Medical Director for Hartford Healthcare at Home. Good morning to you, Dr. Albert. Thank you for being on the show. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I appreciate the chance to talk about this.
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, when you hear hospice, what does hospice really mean? Does that mean that you have a matter of days or, if you're lucky, weeks left? Or sometimes could people last much longer than that in hospice care?
It's a really good question. So hospice is designed originally by Medicare back years ago to focus on caring for people who are focusing on their comfort, focusing on trying to stay home or wherever they call home. And the benefit was really created for people to be treated for up to around 6 months is what the original goal was. I think the reason a lot of people link this to very short periods of time is because often people don't pursue hospice potentially soon enough. So many people think hospice is just for people in the last days of life, where they could actually benefit from it over the course of weeks and months.
So explain that, if you don't mind, a little bit more, Dr. Albert. When you say that people don't pursue it, are you saying that you could find out that somebody is just having a really hard time, like a, you know, like the former president? He's old, you know, he's 98 years old, God bless him. And so his family said, you know what, we just want him to, you know, get the best comfort and care at home. And so he entered this, again, over 3 months ago, and he's still doing very well. Why do we wait so long? Is it because there's a wrong perception about, you know, if I put my loved one in hospice care, it's like I'm signing their death wish?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think some of this is our own reluctance to talk about this, right? It's hard to talk about, as you said, end of life and death and dying. And I think as a culture, we shy away from those hard conversations sometimes. And you know, I think, as you said, for President Carter, this is an example that, you know, he's shifting his care to something different. He's not getting lesser care, which is what I think a lot of people worry about if they're transitioning to hospice. And instead, I think, as you exactly said, he's getting excellent, directed, focused, home-based care to keep him safe and comfortable and to support him as well as his family.
And if you can also explain, you know, what people can expect when you bring end-of-life care into the home, especially, or you bring your loved one to a hospice facility, what can loved ones expect with that kind of care?
Yeah, hospice is team-based care. So it is actually designed that way, and it's actually mandated to be a team-based care, which is, I think, one of the greatest things about it. So the team would include a nurse. It would include social work support, spiritual care, volunteer. They would come to the home as much or as little as somebody needs. So they're coming a minimum of once a week for their visits, but generally they're coming more frequently. And they're coming based on somebody's needs, their symptom needs, if they have wounds to take care of or medications to be managed. They're coming out to support that. Medicare also pays for the home equipment, so things like a hospital bed or a commode or other things, the medications that are involved. So when somebody signs on to hospice, they're getting that extra support of the team, of the equipment and medications that are going to be at their home. You did mention a hospice facility. There aren't many hospice facilities in Connecticut. And so most of what hospice is in Connecticut, especially, is really wherever that person defines as home. So whether it's at their house, nursing home, assisted living, hospice comes to you so that they can do the care where you feel most comfortable.
That's interesting. And again, Dr. Ross Albert's here, the hospice medical director for Hartford Healthcare at Home. And we're talking about end of life care at home or in your nursing home, assisted living facility, wherever that may be. How does someone know, Dr. Albert, that it is the time that they should consider having their loved one get end of life care? Like, how do you know that this is the right time to start investing in that?
Yeah, it's an important conversation to have with both your family and your medical team. So the two main components of hospice, one, like I said, is that, you know, your physician would predict that, and we never have a crystal ball, that you have a prognosis less than 6 months based on your medical problems and medical illness that you might be dealing with. But then the other piece of it really comes down, and it's much more important, comes down to somebody's goals. So we're talking about the benefits and burdens of the treatments that they're undergoing. People are reaching a point where they are saying, or their family is saying, you know, that going through the treatments they are, whether it's chemotherapy or hospitalizations or, you know, other interventions and testing, that maybe at one point, maybe the benefits were outweighing the burdens. But over time, whether it's because cancer progresses, whether it's because somebody's dementia gets worse, whatever it might be, you know, at some point going through all those things are actually causing more harm than good. And that's really the transition point where people would consider focusing on staying home and avoiding those things rather than pursuing things that might cause more trouble than good.
And the only other thing, Dr. Albert, that I'm sure people are wondering is the cost. Does it get really expensive for this kind of care?
It does not, luckily. And there are some costs. So Medicare, and I'm talking about Medicare, but other insurances, private insurances, Medicaid, follow Medicare's suit. They'll cover, like I said, the nursing care, the social work support, the medications and equipments that are related to somebody's symptom management and the disease that they're on hospice for. The one gap in care that we see is in caregiving. So Medicare and the other insurers don't cover somebody to just physically be at your house 24 hours a day. And that's the part where either a family member is going to, you know, potentially be taught to support them, or families may hire somebody to support that care, or they may go to a nursing facility for that care, which again may have some cost. The one thing that Connecticut has that is unique in the country is we do have the Connecticut Paid Leave Act, which does allow family members to at least be home for some of the period of time where they're still getting paid. It's not ideal, but it's, you know, actually better than some parts of the country as well.
And again, if you want to learn more about this, you can always check out HartfordHealthcareAtHome.org. Dr. Albert, I thank you so much for your expertise on the subject and for sharing it with us on the show.
Thanks again for having me. It's an important thing just to be thinking about and talking about.
Absolutely. Again, Dr. Ross Albert, the Hospice Medical Director for Hartford Healthcare at Home, right here on WICC.